Good afternoon. Welcome. After a one-week layoff, back to Bill Allen's Facebook Bible Studies. Glad to have you joining along. Last week, I was in beautiful Searcy, Arkansas at the absolutely stunning Harding University campus for their annual lectureship. Wonderful lessons on the book of Genesis, and it was a great opportunity for me to be preached to and taught instead of on the other end of that. And it's always a blessing and an encouragement to me to be around so many brothers and sisters that I don't get to see very often, and to be around a good group of folks that are seeking to do God's will and share God's word. And that's a great, great blessing. We are going through the Daily Bible in chronological order, edited and compiled by Eflagard Smith. It is a wonderful study. As I've said many times in these studies, my favorite daily Bible reading tool. If you're thinking about that and you haven't done much this year, feel free to start today and read today's reading first, always. You can follow along with these studies as we continue to go through this closing out the Old Testament. And then in January, you may want to get a copy of that. I love the Kindle version. I also have a hard copy as well. Have it on my laptop with Kindle, and it's a great, great blessing to put on your cell phone, on your laptop, on your tablet, and to be able to do that. So I'm glad to have you joining along. It looks like my friends Eric and Cindy Mosley are here, and is it Cindy's birthday, I believe, today? I'm thinking that's right. Happy birthday, my dear, sweet, wonderful friend and sister. Glad to have y'all joining in. Love your family so very, very much. Today is one of my favorite Bible stories. I know you hear that all the time, right? Sorry about that, but truly this is. It is the story of Esther, and it is very timely. Joyce and I got to see the Queen Esther presentation a while back, a few years ago, and it was absolutely magnificent. No greater than the story in the Bible. The book of Esther speaks about this great story. It is especially appropriate and mindful in these days right now, and in the time that we're in, having just marked the one-year anniversary of the October 7th attacks from the terrorist group Hamas against innocent Israeli men, women, and children. It was just a horrific thing. It should enrage everyone in the world that has any kind of sense about them and any kind of moral value. It was just a horrible, horrible thing. And so here we are a year later, and now we're in the book of Esther. If you're following along and you're up to date on your readings, then you read this story just in this past week or so. I think two or three days of readings Eflagard Smith uses for these chapters in the book of Esther. And it is a great story. It is an amazing story. The Jewish Feast of Purim, P-U-R-I-M, has its source in this story. And the story of Esther takes place around 480 BC. Remember your Bible history, the northern kingdom taken away into captivity by the Assyrians, 721 BC. Later, the southern kingdom of Judah and its capital city of Jerusalem taken away into captivity, Solomon's grand temple destroyed. Starting in 605 BC, that deportation took place in three major episodes, the last one when the city of Jerusalem was destroyed in 586 BC. And then King Cyrus comes along. And King Cyrus is a Persian king. The Babylonians fall away from being the world empire. And the Persians and the Medes take over. And Cyrus is the first Persian king, and he reigns about 70 years after that first deportation. And just like Jeremiah said, it would be 70 years. And so in 535 BC, Cyrus gives the call and says, any of you Jews that want to go back can. And Ezra chapter 1 recounts that, and they go back and they rebuild the temple later on. We haven't gotten to it yet, but we will soon, and we'll talk about it on Thursday. Nehemiah comes and rebuilds the walls with the people that are there in Jerusalem, and it's just a great time. Ezra the priest is going to bring about some great reforms, and so we'll be looking at some of those passages on Thursday. But today is the story of Esther, again around 480 BC. We're getting close to the closeout of the Old Testament. I know you're excited to hear that. We'll finish with the book of Malachi. And then after that, we have two or three days of readings from the time in between the Old Testament and the New Testament. And if you followed along in these studies, you heard me say this, that I believe Eflagard Smith's treatment on those days of reading about the time between the Old Testament and the New Testament are very informative and very well written. There's not a lot of detail because a lot happened, but a lot of that happened to get ready for Jesus. And his birth comes along, but before we get there, we're going to look at that time in between the Old Testament and the New Testament. And before we get there, today we're looking at the story of Esther. Esther's king at the time is Xerxes. He's a Medo-Persian king. His name in the scripture is Ahasuerus, but he is likely the same king that is described in history as King Xerxes. He reigned from 486 to 465. And actually, some of the story of Esther is included in one of the Greek historical writers, Herodotus. So we look at the story of Esther, and it is a great story. We start in chapter 1. Great place to start, right? And the king, again, is Xerxes, or Ahasuerus. Xerxes in the NIV, Ahasuerus in some of the older translations. And his queen's name is Vashti, and this guy is not a great king. He has this banquet. He invites all of his buddies in, and there's a lot of drinking and a lot of carousing. And the king summons Queen Vashti to come and to dance before all of his friends and to kind of show her off a little bit. And when Queen Vashti heard about that in verse 12 of chapter 1, she said, "Nope, not going." And it just infuriated the king, but it also worried his followers. Listen to these words. This is pretty hilarious in a sad, sad way. In Esther chapter 1, beginning in verse 15. According to the law, what must be done to Queen Vashti? She has not obeyed the command of King Xerxes that the eunuchs have taken to her, not just the king, but her husband. Verse 16 of chapter 1, then Memucan replied in the presence of the king and the nobles, "Queen Vashti has done wrong, not only against the king, but also against all the nobles and the peoples of all the provinces of King Xerxes." Now, you talk about male insecurity. Boy, it's on great display here. Verse 17, "For the queen's conduct will become known to all the women, and so they will despise their husbands and say, 'King Xerxes commanded Queen Vashti to be brought before him, but she would not come.' This very day, the Persian and Median women of the nobility who have heard about the queen's conduct will respond to all the king's nobles in the same way. There will be no end of disrespect and discord." Man, male insecurity at its best. These guys were, they were not very strong men at all. And basically they're saying, hey, if my wife hears about what Queen Vashti did to her husband, she's not going to do a single thing I say either. And so they say, so here's what we ought to do, King. You ought to fire Queen Vashti and get her off the throne, and then have this big time beauty pageant to where all of the most beautiful young women in the kingdom come and they appear before you and you pick your next wife. Well, the king loved this idea. Surprise, surprise, right? He loved that idea, and that's exactly what they do. They have this big time beauty pageant going on and put the word out to everybody. Well, Mordecai, a Jewish man, hears about this. And he is in charge of a relative of his, a young girl by the name of Esther, a young woman, Esther. And she is his niece or a distant cousin or something, but possibly her parents were killed during the time while they were in exile. Or perhaps Mordecai was in charge of her when they were brought in captivity. Who knows? We don't know. Don't know exactly how old Mordecai is. But we do know that it's been a long time since that captivity. So obviously Mordecai and Esther did not come with the exiles, but they have been in exile. They're in Babylon now, of course, a part of the Persian empire. And so Mordecai hears about this beauty pageant, and he says, you know, Esther, I think I see a possibility here. This may be a way for you to be provided for the rest of your life. And so he says, get cleaned up, get ready, and we're going to present you and let you join in this this beauty contest. Well, Esther, of course, is very beautiful. Also, the hand of the Lord involved in all of this, of course. And so ultimately, Esther has been made queen. And she never told anybody that she was a Jew, because she knew that would have been the end of that. And so that was kept a secret. Mordecai, however, kept watch over her. He would go back and forth outside of the gates of the city. He would be watching to see how she's doing, and kept very close to her as far as being concerned about her. And the king, King Xerxes, was attracted to Esther more than to any of the other women. Verse 17 of chapter 2 says, she won his favor and approval more than any of the others. And so he set a royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. And so that was a very, very significant thing. But then there's this little footnote at the end of chapter 2, starting in verse 21. During the time Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's officers who guarded the doorway, became angry and conspired against King Xerxes. They conspired to assassinate him. Verse 22 of chapter 2, but Mordecai found out about the plot and told Queen Esther, who in turn reported it to the king, giving credit to Mordecai. And when the report was investigated and found to be true, the two officials were impaled on poles. All this was recorded in the book of the annals in the presence of the king. And so things are going really great, right? You've got Esther on the throne as queen, though she's hidden her heritage and identity. You've got Mordecai reporting about these two bad guys who were trying to conspire against the king. And everything's going swimmingly. And now we are introduced to the villain in chapter 3. After these events, King Xerxes honored Haman, son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, elevating him and giving him a seat of honor higher than that of all the other nobles. All the royal officials at the king's gate knelt down and paid honor to Haman, for the king had commanded this concerning him. But Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honor. Of course he wouldn't. That's reserved only for God. And Mordecai said, no, I don't care what the king's edict is. I'm not bound down to any human being. I bow down to the eternal God, and that's it. Well, of course, his friends and the others in the royal company urge him to do this, but he is unwilling to budge. And so, when Haman saw, verse 4, that Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honor, he was enraged. Yet, having learned who Mordecai's people were, the Jews, he scorned the idea of killing only Mordecai. Instead, Haman looked for a way to destroy all Mordecai's people, the Jews, throughout the whole kingdom of Xerxes. You see, he wasn't satisfied with just putting Mordecai to death, which he certainly could have. He wanted to kill off all his people, maybe because he was an Agagite and there was not a great history between those two. But for whatever the reason, Haman, in his insecurity and in his selfish pride, did not want Mordecai to be saved, nor did he want his people to be saved. He would sit there quietly while Haman walked by, while everyone else stood up or bowed down. And Haman was done with it. And yet Mordecai wasn't going to budge. And so we keep reading in chapter 3, and we realize that the plan comes up for this. Haman comes up with a plan. And he goes to the king, and he has the king sign off on it. And that is, on this certain day, it would be okay for all of the Jews to be killed. That sounds horrible, but that's exactly what it was. And so Haman does that. And in chapter 3, verses 5 and 6, he decides to do that. Verse 7, in the 12th year from chapter 3 of King Xerxes, in the first month, the month of Nisan, the pur, P-U-R, that is the lot, was cast in the presence of Haman to select a day and month. And so this pur, this pur, P-U-R, was cast a lot, basically. And they came up with this day, and it was on that date that all of the Jews could be killed. Basically, what they were saying was, the law of the land says if you want to go killing Jews, you can. Horrible, horrible, horrible for any people. And here these are the people of God. Reminds us so much of some of the things that have gone on all over the world against the Jews, even since then. And in the past 1,000 years, 2,000 years, and now here we are again with what's going on against the Jews even today. And so this edict gets written, and the word is put out. And Mordecai hears about it, and he prays and fasts. He puts ashes on his clothes. He does all the Jewish things of mourning. And Esther hears about it. And she sends word to him from some of her subjects, her servants, what's going on, what's going on? And Mordecai says, well, here's what's happened. They're going to destroy all of our people. You've got to tell Esther that she's got to go before the king. And Esther, remember, has hidden her identity this whole time. And yet here we are. And so in chapter 4, beginning in verse 9, they told Esther what Mordecai had said. And then she says in chapter 4, verse 11, all the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law, that they be put to death unless the king extends the gold scepter to them and spares their lives. But 30 days had passed since I was called to go before the king. Mordecai hears about this decree. He mourns and fasts, and Esther hears about his mourning and fasting, sends word, what the heck's going on? What's the matter? And Mordecai says, hey, they're going to kill all of our people. You've got to go before the king. And Esther says, no, 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 I can't do that. The law of the land says if you go before the king and you haven't been invited, he hasn't called you, then the penalty is death, unless, one exception, he lowers his royal scepter to you and accepts your presence. And she says, I haven't been called in a month. I can't go. I can't go. And that's when we get this response, starting these great words in chapter 4 of Esther, starting in verse 12. When Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent back this answer. Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this. You've heard that story, right? You've heard those words, for such a time as this. Who knows, Esther, but that you have been put right where you are right now for this particular moment, for such a time as this. Mordecai's deep faith in God. God's going to deliver his people. He's going to be faithful to his promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and to all of our people. But it may very well be, Esther, that you're where you are so that he can accomplish that. And if you choose not to be on his side, you'll lose, and all of your people will perish. But God will deliver his people from some other means. But it might be, it just might be, Esther, that you are where you are, queen, for such a time as this. How will Esther respond? Verse 15 of chapter 4 of the book of Esther. Then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai, go, gather together all the Jews who are in Susa, the capital city at that time, and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my attendants will fast as you do. When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish. Incredible faith and courage on behalf of this young woman, Queen Esther. Mordecai sends her the word, hey, you've got to go before the king. She writes back and says, I can't. He hasn't called me. I could lose my life. And he says, look, God's going to deliver his people, but it may be through you. It may be that you are there in the palace wearing that crown for such a time as this, for this moment. And she writes back and she says, okay, you pray and fast for 3 days. She doesn't just run into the king. She seeks God's help. She says, my attendants and I will pray and fast, you and everyone you know, pray and fast for 3 days, and then I'll go before the king, and if I perish, I perish. What an incredible, incredible story. Incredible faith of this godly, godly woman. And so chapter 5 begins this way. On the third day, Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the palace in front of the king's hall. The king was sitting on his royal throne in the hall facing the entrance. When he saw Queen Esther standing in the court, what's going to happen? He could say, off with her head. He could say, what are you trying to do to me, woman? Didn't you learn anything about how I treat a disrespectful woman from the previous queen? Verse 2 of chapter 5, when he saw Queen Esther standing in the court, he was pleased with her and held out to her the gold scepter that was in his hand. So Esther approached and touched the tip of the scepter. She was beautiful. The king loved her, and he extended the scepter to her and saved her life. And then he said, what do you want, my queen? I'll give anything to you up to half my kingdom. And she says, well, I'd like to have a dinner, a private dinner for you and your servant, Haman. And he says, okay. And so they call on Haman and they tell him, hey, you've been invited to a private dinner with the king and the queen. And so he's feeling really good. He's feeling really good. And he goes away, and as he's walking along, feeling pretty proud of himself, he sees Mordecai, and Mordecai doesn't do anything. And so he goes back home, and he pouts, and his wife says, hey, look, you, the king loves you. Obviously, he's really got you in mind for one of his highest advisors. You don't have to take this. Just build some gallows and hang him on it. Just take his life. King's not going to care. And so Haman says, you know, I don't have to wait for that pure day, that day when the Jews will all be killed. I can go ahead and get rid of Haman right now. And so that's what he does. That's what he does. And so that night, they're there for dinner, and there's Haman, and there's the king, and there's Queen Esther, and he says, what do you want? If to have my kingdom, it's yours. And he says, well, she says this. And I'm not sure why she says this. Maybe it's because she was still a little nervous about it all, but for whatever the reason, she says, well, I tell you what, come back tomorrow night, you and your servant Haman, and I'd like to have dinner one more time, and then I'll tell you what's on my heart. And so she does. And so Haman leaves, and the king goes to bed, the gallows are built, and now in chapter 6, we read about this. The king is, he has insomnia. He can't sleep. And so he gets up, and since Bill doesn't have any sermon tapes yet, he decides to read. And what's good, boring reading that you can read in the middle of the night to put you to sleep? Well, he reads his records, the royal record. And as he's reading, he reads about this account of those two men that Mordecai had heard were conspiring against the king to assassinate him. And so then he looks around and he says, was anything done for Mordecai? Because he saved the king's life. And they said, not anything, your majesty. And so he says, well, I need to talk to somebody about this. And so he says, find somebody out there. And at that time, Haman was kind of wandering around the grounds. And so they said, well, your servant Haman is standing in the court. And the king says, bring him in. And verse 6 of chapter 6, Haman enters, and the king asks him, what should be done for the man the king delights to honor? Now, what do you think Haman thinks? You're right. It's me. It's me. So Haman is ready for this question. I mean, he is ready. He has dreamt about this forever. And so the rest of verse 6 says, now Haman thought to himself, who is there that the king would rather honor than me? So he answered the king, this is Esther 7, verse 7. He answered the king, for the man the king delights to honor, have them bring a royal robe the king has worn and a horse the king has ridden, one with a royal crest placed on its head. Then let the robe and horse be entrusted to one of the king's most noble princes. Let them robe the man the king delights to honor and lead him on the horse through the city streets, proclaiming before him, this is what is done for the man the king delights to honor. And then Haman says, okay, here it comes. Verse 10 of Esther 6. Go at once, the king commanded Haman. Get the robe and the horse and do just as you have suggested for Mordecai the Jew, who sits at the king's gate. Do not neglect anything you have recommended. The very worst that possibly could have been done to Haman is now about to happen. But what could he do? He couldn't disobey the king. Verse 11 of chapter 6. So Haman got the robe and the horse. He robed Mordecai, led him on horseback through the city streets, proclaiming before him, this is what is done for the man the king delights to honor. Afterward, Mordecai returned to the king's gate, but Haman rushed home with his head covered in grief and told his wife and all his friends everything that had happened to him. And so his advisor said to him, well, you're in for it, dude. This is going to get worse. It's only going to get worse. But at least you have dinner with the king and the queen. At least there's that. And so in chapter 7, they go. Haman goes to have dinner with the king and the queen. And the king says to Esther, what is it? Tell me what it is that you want, up to half my kingdom. And she says, I plead for my life and the life of my people, because my people have been set aside and set apart for destruction. And the king is furious. He says, who is it that would actually do such a thing? And she points over and she says, it is this wicked servant, Haman. Well, the king storms out. He is furious with rage. He storms out. And of course, what is Haman going to do? He's going to beg for his life to Queen Esther. And he approaches her, and he's right there with her begging for his life. And right then, of course, the king walks in, and he sees him, and he says, what, first you try to kill off all of her people, and now you're trying to assault my wife? What should be done with him? And the king is told, well, you know, Haman was building some gallows, and he was going to impale Mordecai, the one who saved the king's life, on them. And so the king says, orders Haman to be killed on the gallows that Haman himself had built for Mordecai. And you would think, wow, that's such a great story. And if that was all there was, that would be a great story. But it wasn't over, because there was still this edict. There was still this edict, this decree, that on that particular day, according to the lot, the pure, all the Jews could be killed. And so the king says, well, what am I to do? I can't rescind something that I've already ready made. And so what they come up with is this, another decree that says, okay, all of you Jews, if you want to defend yourselves, you have the king's blessing. Anyone who wants to fight with the Jews instead of against them, you're welcome to do that. And that's what happens. And on that day that had been decided by lot, by the pure, the Jews end up being able to kill off a whole lot of their enemies there in Susa and in the surrounding areas in Persia. And it goes so well that they say, let's do this another day. And the king says, fine. And they do. And even more enemies of the Jews are killed. And what started out as a threat to the existence of the Jewish nation itself turned out as a great victory for them, a deliverance over their enemies. And so now in chapter 9, the enemies are defeated. And for 2 days to commemorate that victory in February, March, according to our calendar, it falls during that time. There are 2 days of feasting. It is the Feast of Purim, taken from that word that meant lot, that chose the days. It is the Feast of Purim, and it involves celebratory feasting, donating to charity, and also included is reading the book of Esther. And the book of Esther ends in chapter 10 with these words, King Xerxes imposed tribute throughout the empire to its distant shores. and all his acts of power and might, together with a full account of the greatness of Mordecai, whom the king had promoted, are they not written in the book of the annals of the kings of Media and Persia? Mordecai the Jew was second in rank to King Xerxes, preeminent among the Jews, and held in high esteem by his many fellow Jews because he worked for the good of his people and spoke up for the welfare of the Jews. He spoke up. He spoke up. And that's the lesson for us today. Are you willing to speak up for what is right? Are you willing to speak up and speak out against the wrongs when you see them? For the sake of the disadvantaged that can't speak out and speak up for themselves. To speak out against evil and to speak up for what is good. And who knows, but maybe you're in position that you're in for such a time as this. You see, there are always going to be villains. There is evil in the world. We see it clearly today. There's evil in the world. There was in Esther's day, and it was in the person of Haman and all of the ones who sought to destroy the Jews. But there's also good in the world. We see it in Mordecai and in Esther and in all of those that chose to fight with them rather than that sought to destroy them. And we hear it in the words that Mordecai gave to his protege, to Esther, the queen. God's going to deliver his people. He'll always be there for his people. Jesus said in Matthew 16, the gates of hell cannot prevail against my kingdom, the church. We know that the victory is ours, but we also know that the battle is still on. There is still evil in the world. And so we get to choose which side we'll be on. Mordecai became a great hero because he chose to speak up. Esther, marvelous, wonderful, courageous, faithful Esther, brave Esther, went before the king, even though it could have cost her life, and was able to save her people. Today we face all kinds of things, some on a major national, worldwide scale even, and perhaps there are those that will be able to have an impact and an influence there. More likely for most of us, it will be in our immediate circles, in our immediate neighborhoods, or even family, or community, or church. Will you speak up and speak out for what is right? Will you speak out against the evil that you see? I hope that you will. How important is it, Bill? Who knows? Who knows? But that you are right where you are for this very moment, for such a time as this. I pray God's blessing on you, and I look forward to seeing you again on Thursday. God bless.